incredible feat of timing, the Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak has this week enacted a raft of new security measures, just as he's facing increased pressure from opponents over his involvement in a multi-billion dollar embezzlement scandal. Now, the new laws allow authorities to declare what amounts to martial law in any designated, quotes, national security area they deem to be under threat. Prime Minister Razak has been facing calls to resign for over a year now for alleged corruption, and the new laws are seen as an attempt to hold on to the leadership. So will this gamble work, or is Razak staring over the precipice of his own fall from power? Professor James Chin's the director of the Asia Institute at the University of Tasmania. He's been on Saturday Extra in the past to discuss this corruption case, and he joins us again from Hobart. Joining us too is Claire Rucastle-Brown, who founded and runs the Sarawak Report. It's a whistleblowing website dedicated to exposing corruption in Malaysia. It's been blocked by the Malaysian government, and Claire has been the target of intimidation by the state. Thank you both for joining me.
Thank you.
Hi.
So just to set us going, what do you both feel? Is this security measure to protect Malaysia from the threat of terrorism, as claimed, or is it something to do with Razak shoring up his position? James Chin.
Well, I think you need to look at the act carefully. The official reason for the act is that the Malaysian government argues that they need the act to deal with the threat from Islamic State. And also 2 years ago, there was an intrusion in the East Malaysian state of Sabah by people from the southern Philippines. So that's the official reasoning. The act was actually passed in December last year, but it just came into operational in early August.
And it was suddenly landed, wasn't it, on the last day of Parliament, and people got quite a shock. There hadn't been any build-up to it.
That's right. Well, this is quite normal in Malaysia. If they have some controversial bills, normally the MPs are only given one day or the day prior to the voting. Now, the problem with this bill is that not only does it give Razak a lot of power, the main opposition to the bills comes from the fact that Razak has been given a lot of the powers that was previously reserved for the king. So, for example, he has the power to declare any areas in Malaysia under emergency rule. Prior to this act, the only person who had the power to declare an area under emergency rule was the king.
And he has been resisting, from what I've heard this week, signing this, actually.
Yes, the king actually refused to sign the law, and the law was actually handed back to the government with suggestions for amendment. Under the Malaysian parliamentary rules, if the government sits on the bill for more than 30 days, it becomes law, regardless of whether the king objects to it.
Oh, I see. Okay. And how do you see it, Claire?
Well, that was a constitutional amendment that Najib has taken advantage of. I see it as more strong-arm tactics from Najib. He's been building up his arbitrary powers over the past year in response to this devastating crisis that has enveloped him. And I think he's hoped that if he can show that he's a big, strong man and anyone who criticizes him, you know, runs the danger of being put in jail. And there have been an unprecedented number of critics put in jail over the past 12 months, that he'll ride this out and eventually this crisis will blow over. And I think the miscalculation from his point of view has been that this is a crisis that is refusing to blow over. 1MDB is a massive scandal and it just won't go away for Najib. That's been his problem, I think. And it's just got bigger and bigger.
Do you think he thought it would have gone away, do you?
Well, I think that was the calculation. You know, they've come up with some ludicrous excuses. They've lied in every direction. You know, the lies have all been unmasked. You know, although he's exercising extraordinary powers and he's been sacking his colleagues and basically breaking the constitution and getting rid of the attorney general who'd issued a warrant for his arrest, he can't stop the leaks. And the information has relentlessly come out about his own corrupt practices. So the story has just been headlines for over a year now.
Well, I must say, it has been rumbling along, and we've reported on it, I think, twice before. But there are very interesting developments, as you both know. Like about 10 days ago, our own foreign minister, for the very first time, specifically alluded to the scandal. And, of course, the United States Justice Department has filed civil lawsuits seeking the forfeiture and recovery of more than $1 billion US dollars in assets allegedly stolen from the fund. So I wonder, James, do you think a tipping point has been reached? Or not?
Yes, I feel very strongly that Najib will not remain Prime Minister for very long after this. Most people forget that Malaysia is largely a trading nation. This means that your prime minister must be able to deal with leaders from all countries, especially Western leaders. Now that the Western leaders are sidelining him because of this current crisis and the scandal surrounding 1MDB, I don't see how he can survive in office. What he's doing now is basically to delay the departure rather than whether he's going. So my take on the situation is that the series of crisis that he's facing, the final nail in his political coffin, is the investigation by the US government over the missing 1MDB money.
They've basically said, we're going to keep going.
Yes, the investigation by the US is actually the second of a series of investigations, because actually it was the Singapore government who started the investigation going, and the Singapore government actually shut down a private Swiss bank operating in Singapore because of the 1MDB. Right now, the other authorities that are looking very carefully, and charges will follow very shortly, will probably be Switzerland followed by Luxembourg. The other thing about the current crisis is that the reason why a lot of civil society is against the national security bill is that they worry that Najib will declare large parts of urban Malaysia as a national security area to stop large-scale demonstrations against him. The opposition are currently planning a series of large-scale demonstrations under a thing called Bursay 5, and they're planning to have the demonstration next month. So if he were to declare large parts of Kuala Lumpur as national security area, everybody or every single Malaysian who takes part in a demonstration can be arrested without a warrant.
I think there's a massive demonstration planned very soon, is there not?
There is. And it's interesting to hear James saying that he thinks that Najib will go, because to me that's a bellwether, because Malaysians themselves have been very reluctant to psychologically accept the fact that they can ever get rid of this extremely powerful individual. So I think if we're beginning to see commentators like James starting to accept that actually he's on his way out, then that's a big development. People were very frightened trying to get together the demonstration that he's referring to. There have been a number of these demonstrations. This one has been effectively banned. The organizers have been warned that they'll be, you know, breaking the rules if they do it, rules that have been arbitrary by the chief of police, who's Najib's key sidekick in all this. But, you know, I think there is still an atmosphere of denial in Kuala Lumpur. I mean, you've got Najib's ministers are all, you know, saying that the Malaysian officer number one referred to in the DOJ, that there's
this
no
is
evidence.
The American that this is Department of Justice.
The Department of Justice indictment against 1MDB, the development fund, which has been raided to the tune of $7 billion. You know, they're trying to pretend that Najib is not implicated. I mean, honestly, if you had a photograph of him on the front of the report, it couldn't be more obvious who's being referred to. They're also, interestingly, playing the Muslim card. One of the leaders of the state backed Muslim community in KL yesterday told his congregation that you couldn't trust any reports produced by an infidel government. So, you know, they're really playing high stakes here, because as James has said, obviously Malaysia has its trading allies and with Western countries and is very much plugged into, you know, Western democratic traditions and is regarded as a partner for countries like Australia. So, but there's no doubt that Najib is falling back on every tactic, including whipping up the very Islamic terrorism that he claims he's trying to counter with this act.
Well, this is what's so very odd about this, James, because I've had quite a bit to do with Malaysia over the years, and this just doesn't feel right to me, if you know what I mean. It's not like, you know, both Turkey, interestingly, and Malaysia have been seen as very moderate Muslim countries, if I can put it like that. A lot of Muslims are offended by that, but, you know, very much capable of doing business with the West, like doing business with the West, admired quite a lot about it. And now this is unfolding. What do you make of it?
I think we shouldn't underestimate the Malay elite in Malaysia. The Malay elite in Malaysia has always prided themselves as honorary members of the international community. So there's very little doubt in my mind that they would not support a Malaysian leader who will sully Malaysia's international reputation. Now, the reason why I believe that he will go sooner or later and he's currently in the midst of negotiating his retirement plans is for a very simple reason, that the way it works in the international arena is that for many, many major issues, you need summits to resolve the issues between countries. If there's going to be a summit in a major Western capital, Najib obviously is not welcome.
But what I was getting at is that to me, Malaysia was a place that was very comfortable sitting there, playing by the international rules, more or less, if we just allowed for, you know, Prime Minister Mahathir's sort of occasional outbursts. And this is so different to the way they've played. That's what I don't understand.
I agree, and I think most Malaysians, with, as James says, within the establishment and around Najib at the highest levels in his own party, are horrified by where this is going. You know, they're embarrassed. This is not the sort of aggressive type of government that they have bought into. You know, he's incredibly isolated now, but he's also incredibly threatened. The reason, I mean, anybody in his position would have normally have retired over a year ago when this scandal broke out. The reason why he hasn't is because the alternative is very possibly a prison sentence. He's got to find a way of getting out of this situation without the next step being a knock on his door and you know, manacles off to jail. That's his problem.
And final word to you then, James. What do you expect to happen next?
What I expect to happen next is that Najib essentially has two choices. One is that he'll go for a snap election to show that he's still popular and he's willing to risk everything. And he's thinking that if I win a huge election victory, this means I can negotiate my retirement package, and that includes protection from all the investigations. Secondly, he can drag this out. I suspect he will drag it out for a little while and then he'll call for a general election. The reason why he has to call for a general election is actually quite simple. The opposition is now in complete disarray. The major Malay opposition party in Malaysia, Parti Islam in Malaysia, has a secret alliance with UMNO, which is Najib's ruling party. And there's every indication that in the next general election, Najib will be able to beat the opposition even more than the last general election.
We shouldn't ignore the fact that he's a masterful election rigger, and indeed even gave the excuse for the $681 million that had appeared in his account just before the last election as a donation from a Saudi anonymous royal to help him rig elections. So, you know, that he's got all the cards in his hands when it comes to elections.
Can I just make one final point? The experience of Najib and all the business we see with MDB in Southeast Asia is not unique. I mean, in Southeast Asia, we saw the same thing happening with Suharto. We saw the happening with Marcos and certain other leaders. But what is very clear about the present crisis is that this information leaked out very, very early on because of social media. The second point I wish to make is that in many parts of Southeast Asia, this is not as big a deal as it is in the West. And in Southeast Asia, unfortunately, we have a culture of impunity among the elite. In other words, if they can negotiate a safe passage for Najib, they will do it, rather than try to find fault and send him to jail.
Okay, let's watch. A very interesting discussion, Professor James Chin and Claire Rucastle-Brown. Thank you both.
Thank you.
And Claire is the founder of the Sarawak Report. It's a whistleblowing website. It reports on corruption in Malaysia. You might like to seek it out. Professor James Chin from the University of Tasmania, where he's director of the Asia Institute. Your thoughts, your experiences, most welcome. We have a very big Malaysian-Australian community, and I know you'll be interested.